So we're continuing our study on building lifelong zeal. We're on lesson 15. And one of the things that is required for building lifelong zeal is that that we need to use wisdom and everything that we do for the Lord, and use His guidelines, not ours. We need to be embracing love service, because this is the heart of what it means to be a Christian. And we also need to ensure that we're building up our courage, because we're going to need courage to carry out the Lord's work. Sometimes very much courage, sometimes very little. But we need to build courage so that we can make sure that we're going to develop the zeal that we need for the Lord. We also need to be diligent as Christians. We need to look at what we're doing, and we need to be able to see the end of the project that we're going to be working on. And the excitement when we start building zeal needs to be the same throughout, even when we get to the very end of working on a particular project, or when we get to the end of serving the Lord. Our zeal should be building up every year, so that we get to be the type of Christians that God wants us to be, which is zealous for good works. We also need to be aware of the lies that Satan throws our ways. He's going to throw every roadblock that he can, every obstacle that he's able to do, to throw at us, because he doesn't want us to succeed. And he knows that nothing can dampen your zeal as seeing something that you're really working hard at not come to fruition. So he's going to, like I said, he's going to use everything he can to attack you. So we need to be on guard with that. And also, the other thing is, we can reach a point to where we get burned out. And there's nothing wrong with getting burned out, as long as we realize that, you know, we got burned out, so let's rebuild again. Let's start over. And the way we start building our recovery from burnout is that, first of all, we start off with the Lord. Yeah, that's step number one. You know, we understand what the Scripture tells us is that He's going to provide for us everything that we're going to need. And we need to have a good relationship with God, and a good understanding of the strength that He's going to be able to provide for us. And then we can also access other sources either in the congregation or other faithful Christians that you know, that you look up to. And it's going to take time, but the recovery will come, as long as we don't get discouraged. And as we said, you know, first step is God. And we understand that God's going to provide the relief and help and the direction that we need to rekindle that zeal. And the two questions we're going to be discussing after we cover some of the material in the lesson is, what problem do you feel most passionate about to solve, and what level of commitment are you willing to make to reach that goal? And the second one is, do you provide clear directions and instructions for others? And we'll see how important that is when we start looking into the lesson. Now, the writer says that every zealous Christian is going to impact the world one way or another, and that we all influence other people, sometimes for good and sometimes for bad. But we always influence other people around us. And we need to resolve that we're going to change our part of the world here. My little corner that I can control, that I'm comfortable with, that I know what needs to be done. And the example that they give us in our lesson is Nehemiah, as he led the Jews in rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And, you know, Nehemiah when he heard of the condition that the wall in Jerusalem was in, it says, when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days, and I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And we understand that the God provided a way for him to go to Jerusalem to oversee the rebuilding of the wall and the and working on the problems that they had in Jerusalem. You have a comment?
Yeah. You were talking earlier when we struggle to feel things just don't seem to come to fruition. Psalm 46:10 talks about, be still, just know that I'm God.
Mm-hmm.
Your prayer has been heard. Now, with Ezra, you're talking about, there was time to work. But to come to time, you know, I prayed about it. Well, be still and let God work.
And listen.
Then say quit, go to bed. Put that at God's feet.
Mm-hmm. And one of the hardest things for us to do is to wait on the Lord. Because unfortunately, we live in a time and age when we want things done now.
It's a strange thing. My brother, we moved. Mom didn't want to move. This personal stuff. She said, I prayed to God that he wouldn't let you move. His house wouldn't pass inspection. Back to building went out of business. He lost untold money. And he kept saying, she said, I prayed to God that you wouldn't move. And on his way out of town, the car broke down in Orange, Texas. He called and said, she said, my God listens to me.
Very good. You know, we need to determine to make a difference. Now, that's what Nehemiah did. When he heard of the condition, you know, if you read the story of Nehemiah, he was in the king's court. And I believe it was his cupbearer. And such, he was in the position to ask the king for a favor. And especially when the king notices attitude and sees he's being down, he asked him what was going on. And he tells him. And the king gives him the authority to go and rebuild the wall. But, the example for us is, yeah, there are things that discourage us, but that should not keep us from being determined to do something about it. And we need to speak with clarity. This is part of the one of the questions that we have at the end here. And it says, one of Nehemiah's greatest strengths was his ability to speak clearly. It took time to investigate the issues, form his thoughts, and speak directly to the needs of the moment. Well, let's go back to that question. Do we communicate, or do you communicate clear directions and instructions to others? Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I've had problems with, because I always know what I want. And a lot of times it's very hard to communicate the same thing to other individuals. And, Vilma and I will sit there and we'll argue about things. And, well, I said I wanted this done. She said, well, I thought you said this. Nick?
A lot of times we'll get frustrated with someone because we'll ask them what they want, and they will tell us what they want, and then they will tell us how to do it. And as mature adults, as professionals, we typically know what we're supposed to be doing. And to be treated like a child can sometimes cause a little bit of strife at work. It's like, either tell me what you want or tell me what you want me to do, but don't do both. Well, in the building of the temple, they had both. God said, this is the plan. So, as Christians, we need to recognize that God tells us what he wants, and he tells us how he wants us to do it. And it's pretty clear. And we, you know, we need to take that direction, and we need to learn from that. If it's as important as something like this, we need to give clear direction.
That's right. Because, you know, in business, we always assume that the other person understands exactly what we're saying. In a lot of cases, that's not the issue. They hear what they want to hear, or they hear what they thought you said. And unless you spend time to clarify the issue, clarify the directions that you want to be going, then you're going to come up with something completely different. And, you know, what Nehemiah does is he goes and he does a research. He looks at the walls, goes around the walls, he takes a look at Jerusalem, and then once he understands the totality of what needs to be done, then he goes and seeks the help and the workers to do the work. And he's specific. You know, you do this section here. You, your family, and whoever else, you know, you're going to get to work for you. You do this section, and this is what you're supposed to do. Somebody else, this section. That's what you're supposed to do. So that the task did not look overwhelming to anyone. You know, because if you looked at the wall and said, we need to rebuild this wall, and people would look at it and see all the destruction and says, man, we're never going to be able to do it. And if Nehemiah had just said, we need to rebuild the wall, then as Nick indicated, everybody's going to think, well, this is the best way to do it. Or this is my idea. I think that this is a waste to be done. And as a result, we end up with a lot of disagreements between each other, and nothing gets done. But that's why we need to speak with clarity. People need to understand what it is that we're doing. And we need to be able to not only tell them what the problem is, but we also need to have the solution. You know, it would have been very easy for Nehemiah to say, look, the walls are broken down, you need to fix it. But that's not what he did. You know, he made sure that certain individuals were assigned to a certain task, certain parts of the walls, and then, you know, that's all they were responsible for. Not, you know, at the very end here. And what was so amazing there was clarity in what needed to be done. The work was delegated out. And how long did it take to rebuild the wall? 52 days. 52 days. And of course, anytime that we have clarity, what that's going to do is it's going to do away with misunderstandings. If you've ever worked on a project that needs to be done, and we sit down and you don't really sit down and you plan for it, is it going to get done? More than likely not. And even if you do finish, it's probably not going to work as well as you thought it was going to be, because there was no clear direction. And there's, you know, what do you do when there's disagreement between us as to what needs to be done?
Hopefully you're mature enough to sit and talk it out. So
sit and talk it out. You know, that's one of the things that we avoid when we do give out clear and specific direction. Nick?
If you start reading about Exodus 36 and go through the end of the book, you'll see that two characters, one Bezalel and I guess it's Oholiab, they were skilled craftsmen. And they got all the other skilled craftsmen basically told them what to do, but they were told to put their skill and understanding and know-how to work. And I think at some 46 times you have the phrase, and they did all that the Lord had commanded. So here you have people who were skilled, who know how to be creative, who did everything that God told them to do. And we know that they did it right, because what did God do? He came into the tabernacle and he dwelt there. So we can expect that in our life.
That's right. And that brings us to the next point here. Yes, Carl?
As you're talking about here, when Nehemiah gives instructions, as you know, when he first approaches the Jews, you know, he planned very carefully how he was going to do his communication, how he was going to approach the situation. Right? He anticipated where the work problems were going to come from, and was ready to address those. He made sure that that what he was doing first was going to be in keeping with God's will. And he also made sure that he had proper authority from the king. All the letters that he was going to need.
All the letters that he needed
to overcome initial resistance. So that when he laid it out, right? Because it says, you know, after he tells them, you know, come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be reproached. It says, and I told them with the hand of my God, and also the king's words that he'd spoken to me. You know, and so the way that he did that was sufficient to instill confidence in the people and the leaders in Jerusalem, and to overcome any initial hesitation that they may have had. Right, so he communicated very clearly, but he also did all of his preparation work. Right, even when he got to Jerusalem, he spent time walking the walls and understanding exactly what the scope of work was going to be, exactly what was required. Right, so when a plan was then going to be presented, it could be presented with the confidence that Israel would buy in.
And the next thing is cooperation. He had cooperation. He involved the right people, as Nick mentioned earlier. Is that, you know, he knew who the capable and professionals were, and those are the ones that were going to do certain types of work. And he made, you know, he made use of the right people. He you know, for Nehemiah's talent and manpower was not enough to warrant inclusion. Talented people with the wrong attitude and wrong motivations will not be a true asset to the project. And that's one of the things that I learned as being a manager, is that when you put the wrong individuals in charge of something that they don't have the talent, they don't have the background for doing, you're not going to get very good results. You know, it always calls for having the right people in the right place in the right positions to do the work that needs to be done. And unfortunately, I've seen too many projects where the wrong people were in charge of certain parts of the project, and they had no reason to be in those situations because they just didn't have the expertise for it. And when you don't have the expertise for it, it's not going to help you finish the project on time or finish it correctly. So look for co-workers who are supportive of the project, people that have leadership capabilities, and also not forget the spiritual component of your work. And, you know, what Nehemiah 2 and verse 20 says, so I answered them, and, you know, when he was questioning it, it says, the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and build. But you have no portion, right, or memorials in Jerusalem. And the right people will always have the initiative for success. The right people will help you coordinate their efforts with others. Some individuals are better communicators than others. Some people are people-friendly. That was when I used to work for Enron. That was one of the things that a lot of people said I was weak in my dealing with personnel. because I was the type of individual that I knew what needed to be done, and I wanted it done. And sometimes, you know, I have to learn the hard way that, you know, sometimes you have to make compromise. You have to make compromise. But never losing sight of the scope of the work that needs to be done. And so Nehemiah, you know, is a great example for us. And, you know, it says these people, when you've got the right people, those are the ones that are going to contribute to the areas that they care about. And the right people are going to be zealous to go the distance. You know, if any major systems projects, you know, I've worked on several. These weren't just 1 month, 2 months. We're talking about several years to get the systems put in. And if you ever put in an MRP system, materials procurement system, those are there. And there are certain companies that have software to do that. But you have to understand what the whole project consists of, because what you do in step one, if it's incorrect, it's going to affect everything at the very end. So you need to understand how the whole thing fits in together and make sure you've got the right people to do that. And by involving the right people, you're going to build a good, true team. People that are going to be able to get the project done. And that's what Nehemiah has done through rebuilding of the wall. And, of course, you're always going to have problems. But we need to rise above the interruptions. And we need to remember that projects worth pursuing always encounter challenges and threatens the progress. But Nehemiah showed us how to manage these obstacles, whether they come from within or from without. You know, every family, every church, every team eventually faces some sort of problem. And this can lead to feelings of betrayal between us, intense anger. You can't always allow your frustrations to control the situation. And we need to keep those in check. When we first put the work together for Murphy Road, you know, we started out in the strip center. And we built it ourselves. And of course, one of the big problems we had is we really didn't have a grand plan. We just had an idea of what needed to be done. And we had people that put up a wall and put the mud on it and texture and everything. And because it wasn't communicated to the other person, that person came in the following day and scraped the whole wall and redid it again. And, you know, also we had a section where instead of the sheetrock going up and down, somebody put it across. So, again, you know, when you don't have a plan, when you don't have the right communication, people are going to do how they think it should be done. And that can cause a lot of resentment, a lot of disagreement. And, you know, that is one of the things that really impressed me about the members of the congregation that started, is there were a lot of opinionated individuals, but we got along. Irregardless of everything that was done incorrectly, we got along. And I was very impressed with that. Because I know most people would have, you know, if you're not going to do it my way, I'm leaving. So you need to know how to look and address the interruptions that come along. And as I said, you know, there's always going to be differences of opinion in families, in congregations. Everybody knows what needs to be done, and everybody has their own opinion on how it should be done. And, you know, sometimes I'm going to get my feelings hurt, and how do I react to that? And as elders, how do we react to when we have individuals that are having problems within the congregation? You know, we need to be able to address those issues and do it correctly. And you know, Nehemiah does a good job of that. And then, of course, the other thing is we're going to have problems from the outside. Rumors, distractions, and gossip can be very discouraging to those who are zealous for good deeds. And when the Jews were rebuilding the wall, they had a lot of hecklers out there. You know, what are you doing? What do you think you're going to be able to complete? You know, do you actually think you're going to be able to complete this wall? How long did it take to do it the first time? So how do you handle those discouragements? How do you fight back to those enemies? You know, when there's issues that need to be addressed, then they need to be addressed, but not in a combative way, but in a godly way. We need to look at, you know, what is happening, where is the source, and then we need to address it. But we need to do it the correct way. What does Nehemiah do in Nehemiah 6:3? What does he tell the enemies that are building the wall, or that were heckling and causing problems in building the wall? Michael, do you have that? Nehemiah 6:3.
So I sent messengers to them saying, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it? Come down to you.
Mm-hmm. You know, they were telling them, come here. And, but he stays on, you know, stays focused on the project. You know, why should I go down and leave this work incomplete? Because he knows and understands what his function is and what he's doing for God. And that's the same thing we need to do ourselves, is not to get distracted. Because it's very easy sometimes to get distracted. And, you know, one of the funniest things I've seen is, I forget who the comedian is, he's talking about how long does a man have as far as his attention span is. And he starts giving the little speech, and then he says, oh, a rubber ball! And he takes off in the other direction. And, you know, so he says, hey, you know, men have a very short attention span, so we need to make sure that you keep in focus on what needs to be done. Because it's very easy for us to get distracted. And it's very easy for us to get discouraged as well. And, you know, as we said, there are people in the world today that are going to discourage us from doing the work that needs to be done. And sometimes there's even members within our own congregation that are going to be impeding the work that needs to be done. And as I've said, you know, if you've ever been together and said, you know, we want to do this, and somebody said, oh, we tried that several years ago, it didn't work, so we shouldn't do it again. Or don't spend any money advertising a gospel meeting, because we, in the past, we've spent so much money in advertising, and we don't ever get anybody that responds to that advertisement. So, you know, that's a waste of money. We need to look at something else. And but we need to be prepared to address those types of issues. That we are going to have problems from the outside, and we're going to have problems from the inside. And understanding how to address those problems effectively is what's going to make us successful in what we need to do. And rebuilding the wall in just 52 days was an incredible accomplishment. But this is not where Nehemiah's zeal stopped. The final element was to address the people. And in chapter 7 through 13, he partners up with Ezra to help the people reconnect with God and one another. So, once, you know, again, get into a business model. Once you finish the project and your work is done, is that the end of the project? No. You got to teach the people how to use what you put together. And understand, you know, if you have issues, this is where you go to resolve your problems. And when we're talking about the Lord's work, we need to understand what position or what situation we are all in. Because one of the things that we're trying to do is we're going to help each other get to heaven. We have spiritual zeal, and maybe I may be weaker than you are. And I will need that encouragement. And, you know, understanding where it is that we're trying to, you know, what the final goal is, then if I understand that correctly, then it makes it easier for me to restart building my zeal again. And you know, he ends up, it says, by spiritually enriching the lives of those you interact with, your great success will become even sweeter. And it says, the bottom line here, it says, God, good choices will dramatically increase your influence. Choose commitment, communication, cooperation, conflict resolution, and community. And that brings us back to the discussion question. Is what problem do you feel most passionate about helping to solve, and what level of commitment are you willing to make to reach that goal? Do we have any things that we are passionate about? This is a very quiet group here. What about, just throw something out, evangelism of the community? To do both. And it's very easy to increase spiritually if we're studying, if we're, you know, taking time to read the scriptures and understand God's word. But what about numerical growth? Does that take commitment? Yes. You know, it takes commitment, because it's going to require time. It's going to require my time to either in the evenings or weekends. If I'm going to go out there and let's say, you know, we've got a gospel meeting, and one of the things we're going to do is we're going to go and knock on doors. And I need to be committed to be out there when we say we're going to do it. To go out there and start knocking on doors and letting people know that we have a gospel meeting coming up and do an invitation. And, you know, we send out letters, invitations to churches, and we send out invitations to people that have been visited here at Murphy Road during the year. Everyone gets an invitation to the gospel meeting. But you know, the work isn't going to get done if I don't commit the time to come in, fold those flyers, put them in envelopes, address those envelopes, put stamps on them, and take them to the post office. It requires commitment. And, you know, if you're retired, that's great, because, you know, we've got time to do that. But if you're working, you have to balance both as to, okay, how much time am I going to commit here and how much time am I going to commit to work? And if the commitment to work is heavily balanced, then what we're saying is the Lord's work goes on the back burner. So if we're committed, we're going to be successful. Any other plans that we would have here?
Being a preacher's kid, we worshiped at several churches. You know, it's come in, well, we think we're going to make a change. And you go to another. A couple congregations, the people pulled together. There wasn't, well, I'm going this way, I'm going this way. As a child, I was naive. But it seemed like growing up, the group at South Houston back in the 60s, they had a men's night. They went and knocked doors. Brother so-and-so and sister so-and-so having hard times. They need help. They had a coat room in there that was 15 by 15. And it was so full of groceries you couldn't. And it just impressed me. So, look at all this food. They were in each other's homes. I've been to congregations that you don't even know their names. You don't know where they work.
Mm-hmm.
And that congregation, South Houston, had a number of young people. Missouri had it. I've looked back and it's close to 85% of the young people my age are still faithful. But we were all pulling together. We all knew each other. There wasn't anything, well, I'll let you know. There was going to be help there. It was going to be, I'll call you. No, they came. And they were ready to roll their sleeves up and do whatever it took. I wish congregations come together and pull the same direction. And put me in the back seat.
Takes commitment to getting it done.
And both those congregations grew numerically, financially, spiritually. And it's sad to watch. They sold the building, the church is gone. They quit pulling together.
You know, one of the things that the elders had going here is that you know, Ben and Carl and also Nathan were involved, was the young people's class, and everyone was given an opportunity to read scripture, to lead songs, to lead eventually to do invitations. And it required a commitment from the men that were teaching, and it required a commitment from the students as well, and the parents. Because some of those children weren't able to drive themselves here. But once they made the commitment, you know, I look at Julius and Julian. They've come a long way. They have come a long way. I mean, for being able to lead singing, and I think they've led at least one invitation. And the same thing with Harper. Harper has grown a lot being here. But I'm sure he's made the commitment that this is what he wants to do. He wants to lead singing. He wants to be able to help and assist on the Lord's Supper. He wants to preach. And he's done those. But it's because he's got the commitment, and then the elders have the commitment to allow each individual to be able to grow spiritually. Because what we need to do is, you know, I'm not a young man. I've got to be teaching other young men in the congregation to be able to step up and look forward to either being a deacon, being an elder eventually. And we're only going to do that if the commitment is there from the person who wants to learn and the people that are able to teach. And we can do anything because the Lord is with us. All we have to do is be able to make that commitment. And we know that it may not run smoothly all the time, but because we're focused on where we're starting, what our end goal is, we understand what type of leadership we need. We understand how to resolve any conflicts that come along the way. And we're able to communicate directly, clearly, and give proper directions. That, you know, once we start doing all these things as leaders, then everything will work out. And there's so many things that as you look around here and around the community, there's a lot of things that we can be doing. It's the attitude that will make it successful is for us to have the right attitude. Here am I, Lord. Send me. Yes, John.
Yeah, I thought, and Nehemiah's always interested me because he learns about the problem in Jerusalem, but he doesn't have any opportunity to do anything about it. He has the lengthy prayer in chapter 1. But then in chapter 2, he's looking downcast, and the king goes, you know, what's going on? And the text says that Nehemiah prayed. And I know it must have been a very short prayer because the king just asked him this question. But it had to be a short prayer because he saw this opportunity open. And that's what you've just been talking about, looking for opportunities in the area. But he saw this opportunity open, and he realized this is it. And so before he dives in, though, he says a quick prayer. It may have just been something like, Lord, help me say the right thing, you know, or give me strength, give me courage, because it does mention he was a little afraid about it, too. And then he makes his request. And I just think it's interesting that it was a typical day. He wasn't prepared for this to happen. You know, I mean, he didn't know it was going to happen. But when it happened, he says a short prayer, and then he does everything he can do to make it work. And I think that's what we have to do when we're looking for opportunities in evangelism. We're serving one another. Anything that would bring glory to God, we have to look for the opportunities and then depend on God to take us through.
And opportunities are there.
And there's nothing wrong with just saying that. You don't have to not every prayer has to be like the long one in chapter 1. It can't be like this short one in chapter 2.
Give me strength or give me wisdom to say the right word. And that's... when we look at the type of zeal that we need to be having, these are the kind of things that are going to build up our character, build up the habits. You know, if we start building the right habits today, then when we develop into the mature Christians, we're going to have everything that we need to be able to teach others. But as young men in the congregation, you seriously need to be considering, I want to serve as an elder, or I want to serve as a deacon, because these are very important things that each church requires. And you know, we operated here for many, many years without elders, and but in order to have the fullness of what God intended for a church to be, you know, we have to have elders. And you know, we're still looking at getting men to become deacons. And if we're not starting to prepare ourselves for that, then we're missing a very important work of the Lord's church here. Yes, Larry.
That was something that I looked at this week that was really fascinating to me. They said a study was showing that there are only 2 million faithful, which they call faithful members of the Church of Christ. And they were talking about it's something in the congregation that we as members need to be looking at. And they were talking about the mass exit of all the young people from the church. Because that's something that we just sort of focus on and really when we talk about being zealous, talking to the people, that's something that we as members of the church need to
Absolutely. I agree with you. Well, thank you.